Hey there, and welcome to the Voice of Topsfield. This is the podcast where we bring our community closer together by sharing the amazing stories, interviews, and updates about the people, events, and places that make Topsfield so special. We release new episodes every week, so you'll always be in the loop with what's happening around town. You can catch the Voice of Topsfield on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or straight from our website. Thanks for joining us, and let's dive into the heart of our community together.
Hi, welcome to the Voice of Topsfield. We're joined today by Phil Capizzi. Thanks, Phil, for coming to the show. How are you today?
Thanks for having me, Pete. I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great. Awesome. The first question I usually ask people is how they got to Topsfield. So how'd you all get to Topsfield?
So about coming up on my 11th anniversary, so about 10 years ago, my wife is Siobhan. She grew up in town. We were looking to move out of Boston. Topsfield was not on the list at the time. We were kind of looking at Reading and, all the 93, 95 intersection towns. So we were targeting there. We looked for about a year and a half, and then we finally found a place here in town that was two streets over from where her parents currently live. Worked out, and we moved in, and we've been here coming up on 10 years. 3 years ago, right around the time of COVID, we did an in-town move, moved over to another street, and yeah, coming up on 10 years total. So it's been fun. So, you know, my wife grew up here. If she hadn't been here, I don't think we probably would have ended up here. We probably would be in Reading or Winchester, Winthrop, I don't know, other places. We had a list, you know, sure, sell, sure.
Was there anything else that drew you to Topsfield before you came here, or?
For me, no, it was always her. I've actually known her since middle school. Yeah.
Nice.
I didn't grow up in Topsfield. We met each other at band camp.
For real?
Yeah. Middle school band camp in Lowell. So shout out to UMass Lowell, my alma mater. They had a summer band camp program, one of, I think, two that they ran at the time. And she played bassoon, I played percussion, and we ended up going, I think I was going into seventh grade. She was in eighth grade because she was a year ahead of me in school. And crossed over, met her there, kept in touch, got back together in college, and that was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Known her a while.
Do you have kids now? Are they go to like a Topsfield school system?
We do, yeah. So I have two boys. My oldest is at St. George Classical Academy or in Boxer that opened up this year. It's the first year they're running as a school. And then my youngest is over at Trinity in town, Trinity Preschool. And he starts tomorrow, actually, his first full day. So yeah, we love it here. We love the families. We love the schools. We love everything.
So you and I met through CrossFit.
We did.
And how did you land on CrossFit as something you wanted to do?
That's a good story. I was never a weightlifter. I was never, you know, an exercise guy. I was always a musician. I was always a drummer. How old's my son? He's going to be six. So about 7 years ago, when we found out that my wife was pregnant, I kind of had an epiphany. It was at the time when everyone was still working in offices pre-COVID, you know, so you're in the office walking around, and I'm going up a set of stairs because I try to take the stairs whenever I can. It's a good move. And I just got to the top of the stairs and I was like, man, I'm like winded. I'm out of shape. This is going to be so bad when I have a kid. So I kind of had an epiphany. I woke up the next morning. I was like, all right. So my wife and I had done a couple half marathons, and you know, that was fun, right? That's a good mental exercise. We can talk about your cross Atlantic row later in terms of mental exercises, but you know, it's good. It keeps you moving, active. We were running in Boston, which was great because we were right on the Charles, which was obviously a beautiful place to go out and run. And then we moved here and she was pregnant. I was like, all right, I gotta find something. I gotta get stronger. Greg, who owns CrossFit here in town, shout out to him. I showed up one day and I was like, hey, you know, this one, he was in his old space. Doors were open. I said, hey, I'm just, you know, curious what you guys do. Like, heard about CrossFit as a thing. Like, here are my goals. Here's what I want to do. And he was like, yeah, let's get you Let's get you on rent, as it's called, and we'll see what happens. And that was 7, 8 years ago.
Nice.
Yeah.
We had someone else on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, Jimmy, and he had one of the things that CrossFit had done for him is help him realize he could do so much more than he thought he could do. Did that happen for you? It happened to me, that's why.
Totally, yeah. And I think anytime you get into high intensity physical activity at all, it doesn't have to be CrossFit, it could be anything. Maybe it was Teddy Roosevelt. I forget exactly who said it, but what a shame to get to the end of your life and not realize what your body's capable of doing, right? I mean, you don't truly know what you can do until you try, until you test yourself on the physical side. I mean, you have to be smart about it. You can't try to go out and run a marathon cold. But over time, you learn, you're capable of way more than you think you are, which I thought was great.
Was there a particular thing that you learned that you could do?
Know if it was a particular thing, but I think it was just a realization that I could feel strong,
Okay.
right? And because again, I had never been overly athletic. I played organized sports up until high school, and then I focused on drumming and music. And so just to know physically what I could do was really cool. And to feel strong and to feel able was really nice.
Yeah, it was for me, the thing that did it for me was the ability to do pull-ups again. Right at 51 years old, and I was like, I thought that was so far in my past.
Because how long have you been at CrossFit now? It's been 2 years.
2 years. Yeah.
Because I think I remember the first day you strolled in.
Yeah.
I think I was there.
And I had like a hiatus
Yep, everybody
after
needs a
that.
break. You gotta take a break.
I was coming back from a lot, actually. So I had a CrossFit
Oh, no way.
and was there for almost a year, I think. And I was out. I couldn't walk for like 2 months. And so instead of giving up a CrossFit, I just stayed out a couple months and then I came back. And it actually, I think it's one of the things that really helped me get back. And the really cool thing for me is before Lyme disease happened to me, I couldn't do pull-ups. And then it was like 3 months ago. I think you were actually there, or you might even been there. I did my
Maybe.
first pull-ups without like any assistance. And I remember I was doing the pull-up and I had my chin over the bar and I was like, what am I doing here now? Like, So I always think it's cool, like when people have done that, I like to understand why, what brought them there and like, what are they trying to recapture? Because I think CrossFit for me allowed me to recapture some things that I had
Yeah,
lost.
no, it's definitely a good mechanism for that. I feel blessed that I was able to approach it already being healthy. I think that's huge. Very, very fortunate that that was one of the angles for me. Yeah, it's been a good thing. It's been a good thing for me physically, obviously, but emotionally, with everything that's been going on. Really, I mean, since having kids, right? Because I mean, that's a whole different level of stress in life in general. It's still cheaper than therapy.
And like with the COVID and isolation, like one of the bigger things for me was we came to Topsfield during COVID. So we left Brookline when everything was closed, and we came here, everything was closed. And so I didn't get to meet anyone for like a year. So like the social component of living in this community wasn't there for me. So CrossFit was one of the first ways I started being able to engage with this community.
People ask me what I like about it. That's a major component of it too, because I think what it does is it keeps you accountable, right? You've got the community. People know, you're going to show up to this class every day, right? Because everyone gets into, their rhythm, their routine, and you fit that in when you value it and it's important. People walk in, it's like, hey, how you doing? Like, how'd you do yesterday? Well, it was brutal. I almost threw up, whatever the response is. So I think that community piece is super important. And how fortunate are we to have, I would say, a really strong community in that particular CrossFit gym that is here in town. Like Like there are people that I have seen since day one of starting 6 or 7 years ago that are still there, still going, you know, and I feel like the community aspect speaks to that because people get bored with stuff generally. And I mean, that's one of the selling points of doing CrossFit is that it's always varied, but you know, the community behind it, especially around here, like a bunch of them just did the buddy triathlon yesterday. Yeah. So, you know, people are out there, they're doing it.
And they're doing it together.
They're doing it together.
Yeah. Which is incredible.
Yeah.
So one of the really interesting things that you and I connected on is just some of our understanding of global politics.
That's a good
way to put it. I might say it a different way.
Well, let's be clear. I mean, your background is much more deep in that area than mine. I'm sort of there peripherally now with what I do.
Yeah, and I think it's really, really, really interesting, you know, when we started talking about what you do and kind of where you came from, because I think that's really interesting going from kind of what you did to where you are now and kind of how different that is for the implication of the work you're doing.
Sure. So yeah, that's fair.
Maybe you can kind of walk us through that and what you do now, because I think it's just fascinating.
Yeah. So I'll go back to sort of when I graduated college up until now, because, you know, if there's anyone sort of graduating this year or recently graduated that's looking at, you know, what do I do now? What's my career going to look like? What you think it's going to be in 10 years is probably not what you're going to be doing 2 years from now, right? It's going to be probably different. So graduated college and actually started HR and recruiting. That was my first job out of school, was placing people into jobs. And that was 2012-ish. So we were still digging out of 08, the housing crisis, and you know, jobs were better than they had been, generally speaking. So that's where I started. Learned a lot about how the world works, you know, very quickly in that job. Worked out in New Hampshire, which was cool. And then left sort of an agency life and now went into sort of corporate recruiting and HR. And then tried to follow that path for about 5 years. And then I got to the point where, you know, I had worked for tech startups. I had worked for bigger companies. I had done contract work. I had done pretty much everything. And I kind of looked around and I was like, what am I doing? Well, I'm finding jobs for all these people. I want to do something different. So if I was going to go out and hire me for a job right now, what would I want to go do? So I pivoted to be more in like software implementations, consulting, that side of things. And then I landed at a company in Burlington called Everbridge. And that for me, I would say is really where things took off and I finally hit my stride and felt really comfortable doing a job.
What did they do?
So Everbridge is originally a mass communication platform. So out of September 11th, they started a company to basically get information out to people as quickly as possible, right? Whether it's via text message, email, phone call, whatever it is. So that came out after September 11th, like so many technologies did, right? Because, I mean, that was a huge thing. 11 was just this technology boom. And Everbridge started as a mass notification tool, and then they got into location-based safety alerting, employee safety monitoring, executive protection, and then they built out a risk intelligence capability, a risk management platform. I mean, they have a ton of stuff that they do now. When I was there, they had just put out this sort of flagship product that showed a map of the world, right? You could put dots on the map for everything that matters to you that you care about. And then you could see where all the bad stuff is that happens in the world as it relates to those things, right? So that sort of was my first introduction to really like risk intelligence as a thing. I graduated with a criminal justice degree. I thought I was going to go be a cop somewhere. And then ended up going a very different path, but I still kind of came back to, you know, this idea of safety or helping people or what have you. And funny enough, George, who goes to CrossFit with us, he was my FTO back when I was doing 911 EMS.
Oh, no way. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So he was my field training officer for a company called Cataldo in the area. And then obviously, you know, split and they came back and I was like, wait a minute. do I know you? You know, it crossed my mind. So anyway, it's funny the way things work out for you. So got to Everbridge, you know, helped some really cool customers do some really cool stuff. Like truly, like, you know, first experience into like systems integrations and, you know, taking data from one place to another and figuring out what we can do with it. And then, you know, I had a really, really good opportunity to move internally and become really a dedicated resource to a small list of customers. You know, sort of more of the consultant type of approach. And again, got to see and do really cool things. I got to go to cool places. I got to meet really cool people, smart people. And, you know, got really good at that. And then when I left, I actually went to a company that does supply chain insights. So again, sort of monitoring what's happening in the world. And now you're getting a sense of, okay, Strait of Hormuz is usually a problem, right? There are still pirates in the world, believe it or not. So it was another side of kind of like how the world works, right? And what you see going on. And so was there, built out a program there. And then about a year and a half later, I jumped into what I'm doing now with a company called Secure Community Network, or technically a, oh, go ahead.
No, okay.
So we're technically a 501c3 nonprofit. But we are the official safety and security organization of the Jewish community of North America. So about a year and a half ago, just over a year ago, I jumped on board. They were actually my customer back in the day when I worked at Everbridge, which was kind of cool. So made some really good relationships and jumped on board to manage a stack of technology that we use to do our job, keeping the community safe.
Can you go a little bit more what the organization does?
Sure. So about 20 years ago, there were a group of philanthropists, essentially, that got together and said, you know, what if we could build a shield over the Jewish community of North America, right? We have a capability to keep people safe. We have all these people we know. We have these resources. We have these connections. Let's use them to keep people safe. Very noble pursuit. It started off as sort of a 3 or 4 person operation, and since then has grown into about 105, I think will be 110 by the end of the year. And the group started initially as an intelligence gathering apparatus. And so threat assessment work, intelligence research, and then over time it had turned into physical security solutions for the community. So we have security directors that go out into the community and, you know, basically we'll do threat assessment work, training, security support, event support for synagogues, day schools, any facility within the community that, you know, needs help. And then, you know, the community itself, they'll go out and do work too. And then we also have an intelligence gathering capability. So a team of intelligence analysts that will go out and basically track bad people that want to do bad things. And the way that we sort of look at that, I think, or the way that I've talked about that with other people is really is we operate, I think, now as a pre-October 7th organization and a post-October 7th organization. So pre-October 7th, you know, we did a lot of good work tracking you know, anti-Semitic movements in the U.S., white power, white supremacist movements, you know, contributed to a lot of case files for hate crime convictions at the federal level. We work very closely with federal agencies to gather intelligence, hand it off to them, and then they go put cuffs on the bad guys, as it were. So pre-October 7th, we had a very good reputation. We were a lot smaller. We've almost doubled since October 7th from about 60 people to almost 110. And post-October 7th, we really started to get pulled into things in a way and in an operating tempo that we hadn't before. So we're a 24/7 intelligence shop now. We have multiple shifts through the day. We have complete coverage across North America to include Canada. And, you know, we've contributed to a lot of the work that the federal agencies are trying to do. We've gone out and partnered with them and helped them do that.
So pre-October 7th, Would you say that your organization mostly looked at organized, we're following organized threats?
Yeah, hate groups, that explicitly were anti-Zionist, anti-Jewish, white supremacist oriented, and those pre-October 7, the smaller amount of those in the United States than everything that we look at now. But we had a good reputation, we had a good impact working to bring those folks to light.
So after October 7th, just from my experience studying these things, there seemed to be a change in educational institutions of how they handle anti-Semitic instances. Have you seen evidence to that increasing in the United States?
Yeah, so we put out a lot of data as an organization. Anybody can go find this, it's out there. We do a lot of press releases around what we're seeing and things like that. So this is, by no means private information, but the amount of, call it, anti-Semitic activity that we tracked post October 7 essentially doubled or tripled on college campuses. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, and I should, but I think for calendar year 2023, we tracked, I believe, a 200% increase in anti-Semitic incidents from about 2,700 in 2022 to over 5,000 last year. The majority of that was October 8th through January 1st of 2024. It was a marked increase. And if you paid attention to the news for 10 minutes, I mean, you could see a protester in encampment on some college campus somewhere in the United States, right? And Canada too, because Canada's not exempt from any of this either. We're a true North American organization. We don't do much outside of that. We have partners that we work with internationally and other countries and other areas. But yeah, it was a marked increase in, all the statistics we publish. It's just been month over month, year over year, just increase, increase, increase. And we don't see any sign of it slowing down either, to the point where, we've worked with Hillel. Hillel's a major college, Jewish organization, obviously. We have a security director that works with them directly to support them in whatever way they need, right? That's the way I'll sort of put it. So there's a lot that we've seen that we're trying to respond to. And it's really interesting for me because I sit on the technology side of that. I'm not, a retired member of the bureau that's, now working for the organization as a security director. I'm in the office, I'm looking at all the data, I'm looking at the threat landscape that our intelligence team looks at because I keep their tools running. And it's just year over year been a dramatic increase.
And maybe get like kind of expand a little bit about what those activities look like, because those might have changed after October 7th as well. Like, I mean, are we talking about bullying or like kind of what do you see as sort of
Sure.
macro activities?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we've certainly seen, and this is just me as a regular civilian talking, not even as an employee of the organization I work for, is, physical threats and physical violence has increased, right? I mean, you can see that if you look at any of the videos coming out of any of the protests that happened on any of the campuses. We're not that far away from Harvard. That was an epicenter of, I'll say, backlash to what was happening, in response to Israel's actions, and you had kids getting physically assaulted, accosted, made to feel unsafe walking across campus, and then it turns into physical altercations. So it's very clear that there are things happening, and you can, jump on social media and find videos and examples of that all over the place. It's not unique to any particular area of the US or Canada. It's everywhere, everywhere.
One of the most interesting aspects of this, and my background in international relations, is the subjugation of Jewish people that are not Israeli. that are getting associated with the actions of the Israeli government.
Yep.
So like the United States, we have a government, they do things, and we have very little say in that. But we're still at least United States citizens with the diaspora.
Yep.
Right? You have Jewish people kind of everywhere, but yet are still held accountable for the actions of the sovereign state of Israel that have no say in that government. They're not even citizens.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I saw. We can use Harvard as an example that is I actually went to see it for myself.
Yeah.
You know, having gone there. And the what I was seeing on the ground was people completely disillusioned about who's responsible for the conflict between the sovereign state of Israel and the ethnic group of Palestinians.
Sure.
Right. And still, none of that has to do anything to do with people who are going to college at Harvard or Yale or these places.
Sure. Yeah.
And especially for Jewish people, they really have no say in any of that, but they're taking the heat for it. And the things that they were saying, right, like they're to these students, if you had pointed that towards, let's say, Black people or another ethnic group, you would never be told.
Correct.
And that for me is where, you know, like I started getting very much more involved than I'd ever met with the Jewish community, because I was, you know, it's people outside of the Jewish community that can help not repeat things of the past.
Sure.
You know, and that's, so to that end, you know, I'm excited that you're on. You know, I want people to understand that there is a real problem. That problem has grown. And just how you and I bumped into each other and started talking about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, we all have a responsibility as human beings to make sure that the liberty of another person is not violated, right? And that's, it's hard. It's hard to get there, right, in terms of how we live lives day to day. But at the end of it all, when you have ethnic, religious, minority groups, whatever they are, targeted, physically assaulted, and two groups trying to, or one group trying to completely eliminate another group, that's a problem. It's a problem. It doesn't matter who it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think if we do our best to remember that, you know, we're all human beings and we have to kind of keep each other safe, but also accountable for our actions, I think we start moving in the right direction. You know, we have to call out things like what you're seeing on college campuses. It's not right. Because like, if you flip the script on anybody else, it's a complete upset.
Absolutely.
And it's a problem, and it's something that we got to try to figure out.
So Phil, what are some of the things that you really enjoyed doing in Topsfield, other than CrossFit?
Other than CrossFit. Hood's Pond.
Everyone says that.
No one has given me a straight answer. I look at the sign, and that's the determining factor for me. Love going there. Boys love it. They love it in the summer. That was really a great thing to do this summer and last summer. Very, very blessed to get along with my in-laws, and they're two streets over.
Nice.
So spent a lot of time at their house. They come over ours. It's just, I did a bike ride yesterday with my son. Yeah, it's just a good place to be. It's feels like a hidden gem. You know, the more you drive around Massachusetts, you kind of, you know, the big towns and the bigger cities, but Topsfield just, even with the fair, right? And obviously we love to do the fair too. It still feels small, you know, small enough that you know people, you know, develop your own friendships, but big enough that, you know, if you felt the need, you could probably fall into the background a little bit and just be, it feels right.
Yeah.
It feels like a good place, you know, to be.
With the interviews that I've done so far, it's always a very common theme that no one sort of ended up here. Like, they were never thinking they were going to end up in Topsfield. And sure. Then they did.
Yeah.
And then they loved it.
Yeah.
Except for one of our guests who was here since the beginning. And it was the same thing for us because, you know, we moved into Topsfield because we knew a couple of people there. And mm-hmm. that was it. But we decided that we were going to move out of the city. Well, we moved to a place that was, like, really out of the city. And then we're in Topsfield. We moved to a place that was, like, a farm.
Yep.
So I think it's really kind of amazing. Topsfield is like this real hidden gem. It's a wonderful community that supports each other, helps each other out. There's great people here mm-hmm. to learn from. Mm-hmm. It's in the country. If you're a city kid like I am, you're like, whoa, that cow's next door.
Yep.
But it's also like a stone's throw away from very cool things, you know, that you can go to the ocean. You can like deeper. Yeah. Just switch or go to, it's like 35 minutes to the city. So it's yep. incredible.
The where we physically are located is great. We have some friends that just moved from Texas to, I know it's Boxford, so sorry, Topsfield, but to Boxford. And it's the proximity of the Tri-Town to the beach, to Boston, to Newburyport, to Maine, to, it's just, yeah. It's right in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
It's, and it makes it really nice to be here, you know, especially when you have to hop on an airplane. You leave at 6:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, you can get to Logan in half an hour.
Excellent.
It's great. It's just, it's so flexible. And then there's all sorts of things to do. And if you want to go north up into New Hampshire, you can. If you want to go, you know, Western Mass out to the Berkshires, you're still a couple hours away from that. I mean, it's just, it's in a really good spot.
Nice.
Yeah.
If you were a new couple moving in, you're giving them some advice, maybe young kids.
Yep.
What are some of the things that you would like point them towards at Topsfield other than the fair and Hoodstock? Something that, you know, really sticks out for you that you're like, oh.
Well, if you have kids, I think, especially little kids, Trinity Preschool for us was a really great thing. You know, trying to separate from CrossFit because that was, I knew some parents at Trinity from CrossFit, but Trinity is just such a great size. That's a good community. If you have kids, it's a really good way to meet, you know, parents that have young kids too. You know, and just, you know, my son played t-ball last fall. You know, get them out, let them try stuff, you know, let them have a little fun. You know, there's the rail trail, there's the playgrounds. There's so much here that you can just do for free that other families do for free also, that you're going to run into people and they're going to be kind and they're going to be approachable. You know, and you're going to be able to start to form friendships pretty organically, I think, with everything going on. And then, you know, downtown, there's Zoomies, which is always hopping, which is great. So, you know, if you're without kids, you know, you've got that opportunity. You know, there are a couple churches in town. You know, if you're looking for that community, you can find that. I think that's great, too. You know, you can get on the town Facebook page and, you know, just see what's what and what's going on. There's a lot that people, you know, do in town that you can jump onto and attend. So there's going to be something somewhere that you can use to build out some friendships. One of the things that I love seeing and that my wife and I talked about quite a bit, and I think, I don't remember if I mentioned this to you, but 10 years ago, 11 years ago, the downtown shopping center was really tough looking, really tough. And I feel like once Tom started to go out and make downtown look really nice and, you know, his hay bale, you know, arrangements and on the streets and, you know, the lights that he wanted to put on Main Street, you know, once Tom kind of got behind stuff, you know, then you saw Zoomies move in. I feel like Topsfield's at that tipping point, right? Or just past the tipping point where it's starting to sort of revitalize. It's been fun to watch. It really has. It's, people are taking a lot of pride in it. You can tell what they do. And that's really nice to see.
This is great, Phil. I really appreciate you coming down to the show. We love learning more about you and what you're doing, the work you're doing, how important that is. And thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks for providing the platform. You know, it's, people may not necessarily agree with the ideas, but I think if they're open to hearing them, that's a start. Right. And that's what we need is a platform for the ideas to go back and forth and flush themselves out. So thanks for that.
Change can only happen when information can flow freely.
That's true.
With that, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us on the Voice of Topsfield, and I look forward to talking to you next week. This is Topsfield. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Voice of Topsfield. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this week's conversation. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, and all your favorite listening platforms. We release a new episode every Friday, so stay tuned for more local news, events, and stories. Until next time, this is Topsfield.